health, beauty and well-being. Listen to Radio Gorgeous.
Se você disser que eu desafino, amor.
I'm so lucky to be in Hastings, where Jo Fairley lives. I'm sitting in her summer house in this amazing garden with a mulberry tree. And Jo's just been telling me that it's sort of self-seeds, doesn't it, Jo?
Yes, it layers, so we give away new mulberry trees regularly.
God, can I have one, please?
Put you on the waiting list.
Exactly. So Jo has been a journalist probably since she left school. She's an entrepreneur. She was best friends with Paula Yates, and she's a co-founder of Green and Blacks, and she's a co-owner, I suppose, of the Beauty Bible, but she's now invented a new thing called the...
The Perfume Society. Well, I won't say I've invented it, but I founded it, yes, having realised that there wasn't one in the world. And as a lifelong perfume lover, I just thought that there were probably lots of other people like me who wanted to find out more about perfume and meet noses and even learn how to make perfume sometimes. So
now you've already said something. Come on, what's meat noses?
Well, you know, the perfumers, these artists who create the fragrances we wear. And until about 10 years ago, they were kept in the lab. They were under wraps. You never found out who they were. And that's all changed. And it's a bit like when Jamie Oliver and Raymond Blanc kind of came out of the kitchen and got us all interested in ingredients and terroir and what they were making about it and turned us into a nation of foodies. And I think it's poised to happen with perfume.
So why was it kept under wraps? Is there something secret about making perfume?
Well, of course, the actual recipes for perfume are very, very secret. But I think it's partly because a lot of perfumes have been created and they give you the impression that the designer was actually, you know, standing there mixing the rose oil with the sandalwood, etc.
Well, I like to think that.
Yes, yeah. Well, yes. Well, I think you can think that, but I think you can dream on, Josephine, because sometimes they're much more involved than others. But essentially, there have only ever been a handful of perfumers through history who kind of got the pat on the back that they deserved. And there was Chanel's perfumer, Ernest Beaux. And then there was the man who created Dirissimo, Edmund Rudnitska. But apart from that, they've been pretty much kept, you know, in the back room. And then along came a guy about the year 2000 called Frederick Malle. And he produced a range of perfumes called Edition de Parfum Frederick Malle. And he calls himself an editor. And it was his idea to put the names of the perfumers on the front of these bottles and give them credit where credit's due. And it's been so influential in the perfume world that almost everybody now is telling you who created these things. It's really interesting. It's trickled up and trickled down. And they are artists. I yeah. absolutely maintain they're artists. They're right up there with painters and photographers and composers and chefs. And it's about time we got to meet them, basically.
So tell us what a good nose is and how would you kind of train and what you're smelling. And
well, it takes 7 years properly to become a nose. I mean, it's the same as becoming a doctor. And they have to memorise thousands and thousands of ingredients. They have to be damn good at maths because it's a very mathematical computation. So you've got people who are okay at putting, or actually sometimes very good at putting different notes together. But they will usually have to use somebody who is professionally trained to kind of finish off the fragrance and work out the proportions, etc. But I think they learn about 2,000 materials and they have to memorise them. And there's one perfumer, a guy called Francis Curgeon, who's very, very hardworking and has his own label and creates fragrances for people like Elie Saab and Carvin. And he told me there's one particular batch of notes that he's actually hardly ever uses because he wasn't paying particular attention during that chunk of his training. So he has real trouble using them in perfumes because it's just so full on.
Radio Gorgeous. Podcasts for women.
You've got to learn such a huge amount.
It's hard to believe because you smell a perfume. I might smell two or three kind of smells, but I don't understand why it's so sort of scientific.
You might smell two or three smells, but there may be as many as 200 in there. And
what?
Yes. There may be 200 different notes and they work to do different things. They work to sort of make the fragrance longer lasting or to give it a sparkle. So the traditional journey of a perfume is through the top notes, the middle notes, and the bass notes. And each of those sections of the fragrance is incredibly complex. And some ingredients will kind of lead you by the hand into the next stage of the perfume. And that's their gift, is knowing exactly what does what.
So when you first put on a perfume, are you smelling the top notes? How does it work?
You're smelling the top notes. And these are the kind of lighter, brighter notes. They might be things like bergamot. They might be aldehydes, which is a synthetic. They're a bit like kind of putting the fizz into a perfume. So sometimes it'll come at you a bit like a champagne rush, and that's probably aldehydes. And you've got things like lemon and the citrus notes, etc. And then you move into the heart, which tends to be where most of the flowers are, the things like the rose and ylang ylang and jasmine and peony and freesia and all those glorious things. And then after that's been on your skin for maybe half an hour or so, the base notes really start to come in. And they last much, much longer. And they're things like spices and woody notes, like vetiver and sandalwood and cedarwood, and all the kind of animalic things like civet, which is not used in natural form now, but can be used in synthetic form, and musk and ambergris and so on. And it's really, really important that you don't buy a fragrance just based on that first whiff, because it's those base notes you're going to live with.
Fascinating. Now, can we analyse a perfume? We don't have any with us, but you must know some famous perfumes. And can you just talk us through a couple?
Gosh, well, Chanel No. 5, of course, is the most famous fragrance in the world, not least because it's the one that men can remember the names of. Yes. So when they go to duty free, they go, oh, I'll have some of that, please. Yes. Which I'm sure has played some part in its success, but it is also a fantastic creation. In its heart, it's got grass, jasmine and May Rose. And those are two of the most prized ingredients in the perfumery world. And Chanel are one of the only brands to have their own fields of those in the south of France.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, it is. It's fantastically romantic. They're still picked by hand, and I'm sure that every property developer in Provence looks longingly at these chunks of agricultural land, thinking of all the villas that they could build on that land. But the ingredients are so precious that come from that piece of territory that it's actually more valuable as a producer of ingredients. So then you've got, alongside those, you've got some ylang ylang, you've got those aldehydes in the top, which are what make it fizz. And then I think there's touches of sandalwood and other sort of animalic notes in the base. It was the first kind of, it's what's called an abstract floral. So it was very different to the perfumes that had come before, which had tended to be rather sweet, single note fragrances for nice ladies.
Yeah, things like think of lavender. Yes,
lavender, yes. And rose and heliotrope, which smells a bit like cherry pie. And violet. Perfume before then was generally much safer and more boring.
So more like a sort of essential oil or something.
Putting yeah, a
something
little
straight
bit.
On.
A little bit or a toilet water, you know.
Grannies that smelt of toilet
water.
So she brought in something sophisticated, complicated.
And with that kind of head rush in the top, and that comes from the aldehydes, which rumour has it were used 10 times the amount that had ever been used before. And nobody's quite sure if that was the perfumer's intention, whether he slipped with the dropper bottle, or there's some talk that it was actually his assistant who was making up the formula for this fifth sample, which is what ultimately became Number 5. That's why it was called Number 5. And Chanel liked it, and they just went with it. You know, they went with the mistake. But it kind of changed the course of modern perfumery.
So it's going through a revolution at the moment, though, isn't it?
It is. And people are starting to really get interested in perfume. I mean, since we launched, we have had thousands of people sign up.
Can you tell us what the Perfume Society actually is?
The Perfume Society is, first of all, a massive informational website that anybody can visit anytime for free and get a huge amount of perfume information about noses, about ingredients, about the fragrance families, about the latest launches, about perfume history, all kind of gathered in one spot. And I'm incredibly honoured that the aforementioned Frederick Malle actually said, it is the most authoritative perfume website in the world, which is what you want to hear when you've just written 400,000 words, you know, and it's nearly killed you and taken 2.5 years.
Que isto é bossa nova, que isto é muito natural. O que você não sabe, nem sequer pressente.
My weekday fix, darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous.
But over and above that, it's actually the Perfume Society itself is a networking organisation that people can join. For £25 a year, they get a discovery box when they join, which I'll come on to. But they also get invitations to events. They get a downloadable magazine 8 times a year called The Scented Letter, which is the only perfume magazine in the world. I mean, it's nuts, but it is. They also get to, if they want to, attend a workshop on how to improve your sense of smell, which is kind of my mission behind the whole thing.
Yes.
And the discovery box itself is kind of the first step on that journey, because it contains, I think we have 10 samples in there of fragrances, and you get some smelling notes so that you actually start in the same way that if you were a member of a wine society, you would get smelling notes which helped you identify some of the things in that wine. And that's how you start to become a connoisseur, and that's how you develop confidence and you learn about the whole area of fragrance, basically. So we're trying to do for perfume what wine societies and wine clubs have done for wine.
It's such a brilliant idea.
Well, it is crazy that it's never been done. There had actually been something, someone had tried to start something in her front room, I think in Beaconsfield, but she'd run into the sand because she didn't know anybody in the perfume world. So it's okay to have a passion for it, but really, to make this thing interesting for people, you've got to be able to say to Chanel, can we do an event with your perfumer? You've got to be able to say to Guerlain, can we do an in-store event with you? Or all of these things. So you've got to know everybody in the industry, which I do because I've been writing about perfume for 25 years. It's one of the things I was writing about alongside running Green and Blacks. And but you can't be in the industry. So it's
because if you're in the industry, you'd be said, oh well, they're on their side.
Exactly. Yeah. So you've got to be independent, but you've got to be able to go and knock on all these doors, and really that actually brings it down to an incredibly small group of people. Mostly, I mean, really a handful of journalists who have that kind of access, and I happen to be one of them. And I guess because of my business background, I'm able to, you know, take that idea and actually make it happen. I've got a sign up on the office wall in London that says, things only get done if you do them. And brilliant. It's that straightforward.
When did it actually launch?
Our kind of pre-launch was the 1st of May. We delivered 300 bunches of Lily of the Valley to women we admired, from, everybody from Mary McCartney through to Sienna Miller through to... the editor of Vogue, writers, authors, TV presenters, businesswomen, etc. Because in France, on the 1st of May, they have a national holiday, and it's marked by people giving each other Lily of the Valley. And it's such
wonderful.
A lovely thing to do. And so we decided to launch on just about the only day in the calendar that has a kind of fragrant association. And we're rather hoping that after our example, that maybe in England people will start to give each other Lily of the Valley.
Especially
on the 1st of May.
Wouldn't it be wonderful that women can send women?
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And that's what we did. We didn't send any to any men. I think I might have dropped one off at Jasper Conran, actually.
Yeah, he's not down. Well, he'd be
I'm sure he wouldn't mind.
Yeah, he'd be well into it. So what was the reaction when you sent these Lily of the Valley out?
It was lovely, and we got, you know, lots of Instagram postings and the first trickle of people signing up, and then we launched probably on the 26th of May. So really it's only been about 6 weeks.
So exciting.
And it is really, really exciting.
Over 1,000 followers can't be wrong. Follow us on @radio_gorgeous on Twitter, darling, of course. Mwah. We're going for a revolution. Everything's moving on in the perfume world. What sort of smells are in at the moment?
What sort of smells are in? I've suddenly noticed that there's a lot of peony around.
What does that smell like?
Peony is a lovely sweet floral smell, basically. Mm. Quite fresh floral. There's lots of citrus because it's summer, basically. And so those citrusy smells are very popular right now. There is still the kind of gourmand trend, i.e. foodie ingredients. So quite sweet smells like caramel and toffee, and in the right hands, those can be absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, because I'll be critical now and say that most perfumes I smell, I say yuck, because they're just too sweet.
And you know what? Those make great starter perfumes for girls. I mean, in our discovery box, we've got everything from a very actually sophisticated gourmand fragrance, which is Miller Harris Fleur de Sel, which has got a note of salt and a couple of sweet notes in there. But we also go through, we've got Vive la Juicy Noir, which is a very sweet perfume. However, the teenage girls who've bought it, or in the case of my best friend, given it to her daughter, absolutely love that smell. So those smells are kind of what Body Shop White Musk were to our generation. Absolutely.
And Charlie before that.
And actually, I smelled Charlie again recently. It's rather good. I'm quite surprised.
Is it sweet?
It's not sweet. It's actually a copy of a kind of sophisticated French perfume.
Wow.
It's surprisingly grown up. So I think that what happens is your taste basically becomes more sophisticated over the years. Then again, you know, Angel is one of the best-selling perfumes in the world, and that is a very sweet gourmand fragrance. And the absolute key to what we're about is not being snobby about perfume, because there's a lot of perfume snobbery out there.
Yes, I'm one of them. Yeah, yeah. But you can accuse me.
But if you look at blogs and things, and of course there's been a massive rise in perfume blogging, and actually that's part of what's made people engage with perfume and got them very, very interested. But as with most kind of criticism, a lot of it's about showing how clever the person is who's writing it. And they tend to do that by writing negative things about certain perfumes. It's actually much easier to write negative stuff than it is to write positive stuff that doesn't look gushy. And so I don't want to make anyone feel bad about their perfume choices. You know, if you happen to love Taylor Swift Wonderstruck, that's fantastic.
What does that smell like? Come on, Joe.
It's a fruity floral. It's a fruity floral.
Now, we're kind of a little bit older, you know, 40 plus, let's say. What perfumes are out there for us, would you say?
Gosh, there are loads. There are absolutely loads. I mean, we are driving this boom in niche perfumery. A lot of very, very interesting smells being created that are kind of, you know, that they don't have the same cost restrictions on ingredients. They're often quite expensive. But brands like Illuminum, Frederick Malle himself, Caron, the old French fragrance company, there's a massive interest in these small houses. There's a wonderful woman who you should interview on this programme called Sarah McCartney, and she started her own perfume line called 4160 Tuesdays, because apparently we on average have 4160 Tuesdays in our life, and wouldn't it be better if we spent them doing something fabulous? So she loves the idea of she chose that for the name of her company, but she's created some absolutely stunning fragrances with very unusual names like The Lion Cupboard and Mad Max. And she gave me a prototype of one the other day, which I'm not sure is going to see the light of day, but it's actually called Tarte's Boudoir. Because, you know, it's the classic thing that you say when you walk into a room, smells like a Tarte's Boudoir.
Yeah.
And it's divine.
Yeah, so, I bet it's got a sweetness and then a muskiness.
Absolutely. It's really gorgeous. Uh-huh. It's really gorgeous.
Now, I'm wearing a Tom Ford one now. Don't know whether you can smell it. Can you smell
it
on my neck?
It's not,
smell it on my...
It's not Café Rose.
No, it's Café Rose.
Yeah. Wow. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Because people come up to me and say, oh, my God. God,
I know.
You smell
I have
good.
A bottle myself. I absolutely love it. It won an award, actually. It won a Fragrance Foundation award, quite rightly. absolutely fantastic fragrance.
God, and, I'll take the right one.
You picked the right one. And, you know, he's another, it's another brand that's really helped to kind of drive this interest in kind of more exclusive.
Exactly, because I love his perfumes because they last.
They last.
Which is so important to me. I can't stand them, Bollier. And they have depth, you know, that's what I'm looking
for. They have real depth and complexity. Mm. And I happen to know he's a complete control freak. So this is one designer that, let me tell you, is absolutely, you know, involved every single step of the way in the fragrances that have his name on.
So how do we get in touch with the Perfume Society?
You go to www.perfumesociety.org or you Google Perfume Society. You know, unlike when I first Googled it and the fourth entry that came up was Steak Appreciation Society, which is how I knew there was a gap in the market. We're right there now at the top of the Google ranking. So that's how you find us. And it's hugely exciting. And I think I'm going to have great fun for the next 10 years doing this.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'm definitely coming to your next event. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much. Had a gorgeous time.
Radio Gorgeous, giving you a voice. Why not leave us a voice message? Over to you now.
Eu mesmo mentindo devo argumentar. Isto é bossa nova, que isto é muito natural. O que você não sabe, nem sequer presente, é que os desafinados também têm coração. Fotografei você na minha Rolleiflex. Revelou-se a sua enorme ingratidão. Não poderá falar assim do meu amor. Ele é o maior que você pode encontrar, viu? Você com a sua música esqueceu o principal. Que no peito dos desafinados, no fundo do peito bate calado. No peito dos desafinados também bate um coração.
Created by women, for women. RadioGorgeous.com